Hey everybody, welcome back to Heal and Heal with Lainey and Kim.
Hello.
It's a beautiful Monday. It was like 90 degrees today. I didn't get to go outside at all though because I had a super busy day at work. My partner is out of office at the moment, so I'm covering for our whole team, which is like 18 people, and it's a lot. It's a lot of management. So I'm all on a whole management kick, and I'm actually reading a book my dad gave me
Oh,
about
nice.
management as well, which and coaching, which I will actually make you read after I'm done with it.
Oh
Or
no. What's it
actually,
called?
you're not gonna read it. I just know that. So we'll do an episode recap, and I'll talk about it, and I'll try to impart some lessons for you in your coaching.
What's it called?
I don't remember. It's something like Asking Questions. It's basically a book where in every like check-in you have with your employees or like work plan, it's like the questions you should be asking to get into like what people are working on, what's important to them, like what they want to move forward with. Like
Gotcha.
it would be really good questions for you probably in your private lessons, like with pet clients and sport clients. But
Nice.
I want to start off right away before we forget. We're gonna recap our experience at Helper Camp. We'll see if we finish it or if we need to leave some stuff to next week. But I want to talk about right off the bat, we had a response to last week's episode where we recapped the trial. And Kim was making the point, which we have made amongst ourselves many times, that inspiringly, excitingly, the actual qualifications to go to a national level competition in the United States are lower than someone might expect. That was the point being made. The point was not nationals is easy to go to. It's easy to train a dog to a national level. Nobody was making any of those points. Nobody was saying that. The point was, hey, you who might be newer to the sport and sad and thinks you have to have the most wonderful dog of all time to compete on a national stage, it's not actually the case. I don't know. Do you want to share any more about that?
Yeah, no, I mean that pretty well summarized it. I think like the only thing I'll add is like that idea of it should be a kind of a positive thing that like so to kind of segue into helper camp a little bit, like it was pretty fucking amazing that like I got coached by Ivan Balabanov, which is like the equivalent of getting a private lesson from I don't know sports that well, but let's say like Tom Brady, like for nothing. You know what I mean? Like, okay, so jiu-jitsu, right? Like there's a guy in jiu-jitsu who's like one of the original founders of it. And I think someone said, like, you're just chatting at the gym, and someone threw out the figure that it's like $10,000 to get an hour with this dude. And it's like our sport is so accessible in really, really cool ways because it's not a pro sport, like in that way that others, you know, it's not like football where it's like it's televised and it's like, yeah, anybody can be an NFL player theoretically, but it's like the same as saying that anybody can be president of the United States. Like, sorry, it's probably not going to be you, but in Schutt's End, like you can actually, if you set your mind to it and set yourself up for success in the right ways, like it's average people that are not dog trainers professionally that are going to these high levels. Like, I think it's Frank Phillips who's always uses the example of like he's an average dude with a day job and like is obviously wildly successful in dog sports. So it's like that's the unique and really cool thing about Schutzen. And so in that sense of it being accessible, like doesn't mean it's easy, but it's accessible, right? Like I use this analogy a lot with my clients is getting a Schutzen 3, like even just talking about that or like getting a title, period, right? It's like running a marathon is not everyone's gonna necessarily be like Boston Marathon first place or whatever, but everybody can run a marathon. It just takes consistent, disciplined effort. And like unless you seriously have, and again, like there's always these caveats, but like unless you seriously have a medical condition that prevents you, like the average quote unquote person can totally run a marathon if you put your mind to it. So that's kind of what, and again, like we've said that before, but just kind of reiterating that that was, yeah, intended to be like a positive thing. And anybody that, you know, has hung around like conversations or whatever, like I have the utmost respect for people that go to that level, if not like too much respect, which is a separate conversation. So yeah, like I definitely didn't mean to belittle anybody's accomplishments or anything like that. Like that was, yeah, not the overall point there. So
I have a point to make, which is that this podcast shouldn't exist because it's a small sport and there's not that much content available out there publicly because everybody's afraid of looking like a jackass. Everybody's afraid to put themselves out there. Everybody has all these ideas and stuff, but they only share it in their local communities with their club or whatever the case may be, like only with super trusted people because they've been burned so many times. And me and Kim do not have to do this. In fact, it's deeply inconvenient to me and like actively disruptive to me and my goals. Like it, I do not benefit from it. It's literally bad. But like we do this because there's a couple of people that really enjoy it, and there's a couple of people who are maybe sitting at home with their bully mix, dreaming about the day that they can get into Schutzen, and they just like hearing two friends talk about it. Because it's not meant to be Kim the genius and Lainey the
No.
adoring student. It's
Is
Kim.
definitely not how it is.
Yeah. It's Kim talking about her experience, which is that she grew up young in the sport and now she's in a phase in her life where she kind of wasn't competing for a couple of years and now she's starting to get more serious again. And then it's me who's brand new to the sport and I have my first and second dogs. Like, nobody is sitting here. I'm just like, I mean, I get how the understanding could have happened, but I'm pretty frustrated on a personal note because, like, I know how annoying people think I am for having this podcast. Like, I am fully aware of how much I piss people off on Instagram, Facebook, whatever, just sharing my thoughts and everything. Like, I'm fully aware. I'm not confused. I know that people are sitting there saying, why do Lainey and Kim have a podcast? They haven't done X. They haven't done X. They haven't, you know, they don't have this. They don't have whatever requirement. Well, newsflash, guys, if you sit around and wait for everyone to have the right requirements all the time, you're gonna make it to the top and be ready to put out some content, and somebody's gonna say, well, they haven't been to Worlds. So,
Yep.
or, oh, they've only been to Nationals 3 times or whatever. Like, it's never ending. It doesn't matter. That's why we're on here not coaching anyone how to do Schutzen. We're just interviewing some interesting people. We're talking to each other. Literally, last week's episode was about our trial experience at a club trial doing a BH and a 2. Like, I was trying so hard not to swear because, like, yeah, I'm super excited about a BH and I'm gonna talk about it for like 45 minutes because that's what's important to me right now. And like I just the people that were a little annoyed about your comment are like friends of mine and it's not a big deal, but like the people that I know are sitting around saying how stupid this podcast is, like I know who you are and I'm not afraid of you and I'm not gonna stop podcasting because it pisses you off. Like, I'm just not. It just doesn't matter. Like, because I'm not here for you. I'm here for the 19-year-old girl who can't get a Schutzen dog. I'm
Yep.
here for the 20-year-old guy who's living in Wyoming and there's not enough clubs around. Like,
Yep.
that's who we're here for. We're not here for you. That's my
Yeah.
rant. That's my little
Yeah.
rant.
No, I mean, I think it's a good topic, and I mean, I think it maybe is a topic for a separate podcast, honestly, because it is unfortunately a little bit of an integrated thing in the culture of Schutzen that there's a lot of arguments from authority, and that is a logical fallacy. Like, just because you have done something or are in a certain position doesn't mean that everything that comes out of your mouth is valid.
Yeah.
Nor does the opposite is also not true, that if you haven't done a certain thing, that anything that comes out of your mouth isn't valid. And I think it's an unfortunate thing that it's a little bit like, you know, I think again, you kind of see the shift in Instagram culture, that it's again, like I've told Lainey this, that for me to see it was like, whoa, there is kind of this undercurrent here of new young people who are using their voices and just saying shit. And at my old club, that would not have been allowed. And I think it's important for, I don't know, just like for that freedom to be there. And if you say stupid enough shit, like people are gonna stop listening to you. Like, and but the people that are listening are still getting value from it potentially, right? Like, I don't know. I'd rather let people make decisions with the cards fully on the table. And you can say that we're putting out, information, like you said, like it might not be for you, but like there's nothing we're saying that's meant to be, I don't know. Like, I'm not, neither of us, just reiterate, are claiming any authority on this podcast. Like, we're literally just bullshitting and hoping that some people get some value out of it and listen in. And like, that's why we're doing it. So it's fun for us to have a little bit of a platform to kind of make sure that we talk to each other every week about this stuff and like get a little bit out of it. But yeah, I mean, find the value that you want in it, I guess. So,
Yep. I mean, that's
and
how I
again,
took my
not directed
stance. Like,
anyone in particular, like just, but if it applies to you, like I don't know, maybe
well, I
like check
direct
your
it. I
culture a little.
direct, like, again, I direct it to a couple of people that I know are sitting around talking about how stupid this podcast is. And I love that. I honestly love that for them. Like, I love that they think it's stupid because that means they're not listening. And that's great because it's not for them.
No, for sure. Yeah,
So.
I mean, that's life. Like, everyone's gonna. I mean, again, the fucking cliche, like, oh, there's always haters, and like, I hate being that person, but like, I don't know, like, it just, yeah, I just don't even think about it at this point.
Yeah, I one of the best things I ever did was I just started blocking people like crazy on Instagram. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
Anyway, so
I have not gotten that controversial yet. I have not reached that level of social media status.
yeah, just wait. Just wait till so now that you have more dogs with young people, I'm waiting for someone to cancel you for something. I'm
Yeah,
like I'm
right.
just waiting for it.
I'm sure it'll happen.
Those posts exposing your breeder, those are like the most people love those.
Yeah, it's true.
Okay, Helper Camp.
Yep.
So I went to Helper Camp from, I was vi visiting my family in Virginia. So then I just swung over to Knoxville area. Helper Camp was held in the mountains outside Knoxville. And it was just the best. Like, basically, from when I showed up, I was a little late the morning because I delayed my departure so that I'd be close to an emergency vet in case Todd had some kind of problem because he tried to die on me earlier that
Okay.
week with the THC poisoning or whatever. But so like I arrived I think at like 1 p.m. on the first day. So you guys had already done like Marco
Intro.
had done like a intro kind of thing with you and you'd introduced yourselves to your groups. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, is this supposed to be where I'm supposed to pick up?
Well, I don't know. I didn't know if you had any notes from the Marco thing you wanted to share. Like,
Oh.
okay, let
Yeah,
me
go.
say this first. Kim, I want to talk about our experience at camp. I'm really not that psyched or interested to share like that much theory because I think it's not really like our place. Like we
Yeah,
can
I
like
agree.
introduce the concepts and stuff, but I really don't want to get like I don't want to get deep into that. Now I want to talk more about like our experiences and practical stuff.
Sure. Yep. Yeah, so well, you kind of started a sentence like from the moment I got there, my experience was something, and then
Oh, it
you
was
kind
just
of
the
cut off.
best.
Like
It
that's
was
what I
the
was
best.
waiting for. Oh, it was just the best. Okay,
Yeah.
yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, and the location was amazing, like the vibe was amazing. I mean, honestly, like back to that discussion of culture, like something that you said that Yuri said, and like this sentiment was definitely present in other groups, but I liked how Yuri said it. You're not allowed to, or at Helper Camp, no shit talking's allowed, including about yourself. And so the whole environment was like extremely open, and just everyone's there to develop and improve, and there's again, like no judgment, like just super cool vibe. Everyone's there to learn, everyone's there to help, and like definitely like people got some tough feedback, but it was all very, very constructive, which I thought was really cool. And definitely very supportive of that idea. And so Marco kind of just, well, the presentation was a little bit on the basic theory of, like prey and defense, and then, well, basically, so different people use different terms. And again, this is where it gets a little bit tricky to get too deep into theory. But essentially, for Marco, the way he describes it, there's prey and then there's reactive aggression and active aggression. But he kind of just went over the basics of that, just so everyone's kind of on the same page. And basically, all, I guess I shouldn't say all of, but the instructors that I knew about, that I had friends that were in their groups and stuff, all taught along those lines. And so, like Greg, for example, used slightly different language. He talks about predatory aggression versus rival aggression. But it kind of all comes to a little bit the same place. So anyway, so that was Marco's presentation. Basically just laying those foundations, and then yeah, we had kind of an introduction to our instructors and started working. So
So just to kind of dumb it down for those who don't know, or like so that we can all have common definitions. Basically, a dog and prey, a shepherd and prey is going to be silent because we don't bark at the rabbit. They're going to be silent. They're going to be tracking the prey object with their eyes, usually getting ready, maybe making misses, getting ready to bite, but very much locked on. Versus the then aggression, which most people would say barking, dog that's forward, confident in their stance. There's active aggression, reactive aggression. Active is the dog is, ready to get in the fight, is trying to push the helper. Reactive more being like a dog that speeds up their barking, gets super jacked when they hear the whip crack, stuff like that. So if you think about the
well,
helper is activating.
yeah, and I was gonna say that's the key point when people hear reactive aggression. Sorry, I cut you off too soon because you were about to kind of clarify that, but I just
No, you're
want
good.
to make sure that people understand that when we talk about reactive aggression, like we're not talking about the classic definition of pushing a dog into like fight or flight mode where they're so upset that they're just like and like just going nuts. Like people are like pet dog reactivity. Like, I think a lot of people hear that term and they think of it that way. And that's not really what Marco's going for. Like, reactive and active literally just means reactive aggression is the helper is still kind of doing the work and putting the dog in that frame of mind. Active aggression just means that the dog has learned the context and basically put it on verbal cue. Or
Exactly.
contextual cue. So when you hear us say reactive aggression, it is still extremely fair and humane training to the dog. It is more like a sparring match, but we have to kind of let the kid know, like, hey, we're at the gym now, because you can't literally tell a dog, hey, it's Schutzen time. You know what I mean? So that's more what it is. I just wanted to make sure to clarify that.
Yeah, so the central thesis of camp is that the helper camp that was put on, they kind of had like a central program that was like Tim said, everyone had their spins, but it was like a central program. So the central thesis is that the protection routine is all about the dog doing the best job possible of fluidly switching between drive states when they're required. So if you think about the parts in the routine, for example, the dog searching the blinds, perhaps in prey, then coming into the guarding, they're in active aggression, pushing the helper into the blind. Then the escape bite, they're in prey until they're driven. That's aggression. Like the whole routine is the dog flipping nicely back and forth between drive states. So the thesis of the camp is that helpers should be working dogs to be stronger at switching between drive states and switching fully when they do switch. So switching like 100% to each drive state, committing
Yeah.
back and forth. That's the ideal dog. And the ideal helper is somebody that helps teach dogs that. There's a few ways, but you basically are trying to create a dog that's A, active in their aggression, not passive, not waiting for the helper to activate them, and then B, switching fluidly between. Because, I mean, basically the central thesis was that you can really build dogs in protection by being super clear about drive states because the nice barking is made by true switching into the right drive state, and the nice grips are made by true switching into prey. So,
Yeah.
kind of the central
Yeah.
elevator story, basically, of the camp.
Yeah. And if you guys do want more theory on, again, like we can get a little bit into it, but this stuff is ethologically sound. Like you can look at, like, Google the prey sequence in animals. And you'll see like the similarities to Schützen. And then look at, like, this is less Googleable. but I know the prey sequence is out there. But then also, like, how animals interact with each other when they're in conflict with something that is not viewed as prey, but rather a rival.
So it's funny because no one, or maybe one or two people, are going to Google
Oh, yeah.
that.
It's
But
fine.
so it's kind of interesting because me and Kim had actually, and Sam, and it was just me, Kim, and Sam, we had gone down to a day with Greg Dowd in Illinois a few months ago that was put on by, was it AWMA that put it on?
AWMA, yep.
Yeah. They had put on a day with him, and he had talked about these two systems. Of the prey sequence versus the rival aggression, like the way that a fight goes down. He had talked about those during that day of learning, but there was like a lot of working dogs happening, and like it wasn't,
Yeah, it
I don't
wasn't heavy on
know,
theory.
yeah, it wasn't like as clear then, but like the central thesis of Helper Camp basically, like it just made a lot of sense, and it was really nice that they all. So like obviously everybody had style differences, right? And Yuri was really careful to say that like even if you all agree on theory, like the magic of this is people's style, and like people are still gonna do different exercises and have their own like flair on things.
Just like a,
But it
there's still
was
principles, but everybody does it very differently at the end of the day.
exactly, and it was really nice that nobody felt gypped at camp, you know, or wait, oh, you're not supposed to say that anymore.
Wait, what does that mean?
So gypped is like ripped off, but you're not supposed to say that because it comes from calling people gypsies, which you're supposed to say Romani people now, I'm pretty sure. So
Oh.
sorry, that's like a slur. You're not supposed to say
Okay.
that. So nobody felt like ripped off because of the because the instructors were presenting unified theory with like style differences. So I felt like all the groups were really good in that way. I think it would have been really awkward if like
Very.
some, it was like, oh, so and so's group like sucks, like he sucks as an instructor or whatever. No, everyone was like really good and kind of unified on that front, so.
Absolutely. And definitely you could tell, like, in the background, these guys were absolutely talking about making sure that everyone was kind of presenting a certain set of their information and, like, not going too rogue on stuff. Like, it was very, like, even they did kind of like little exit interviews with all of the helpers. And definitely, like, some of the questions they asked, like, how can we improve and stuff like that. Like, they're definitely having meetings with each other and talking with each other. It's not just like it is a camp. Like, it's a holistic event. It's not just a, you know, six individual seminars happening on the same weekend. It's literally everyone's learning this curriculum, but just a different teacher teaching it, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry if you guys heard like a little squeak. I thought I found like a zit thing on Sister and I was squeezing it because I'm psycho.
I didn't hear anything. That's funny.
Anyway, yeah, so I do want to also say that so I missed like the intro for the handlers. So the way that Helper Camp worked was that the helpers went through an application system where they provided a video of their work and kind of talked about, you know, what their situation was, what their background was, and they were vetted and chosen specifically. The handlers, they needed people's dogs to work. So they called for handlers to volunteer to bring dogs, which is how I was able to go. So we still paid for like a meal ticket, and I think we paid the same as you guys. I don't
Yeah.
know. But like the idea was that we came and got to hear all the knowledge being shared and stuff, and provided dogs to work. So there was a handlers meeting the first morning, which I missed, but my impression of the handlers meeting, the camp was run very tight in terms of welfare of the animals, which was really nice. Like you were expressly supposed to walk the dogs like 10 full, not, you know, 6 minutes, not 4 minutes, 10 full minutes after you worked the dogs. to help them cool off. There was tons of kiddie pools for the dogs, tons of water. Every single place where you were working with the instructors, like, they were far away from each other, and they all had their own kiddie pools, their own waters that were refreshed every day. Like, really, really military level care for the dogs, like, yeah, very prioritized, which I was really glad to see because it was quite hot.
Yeah.
And, like, even the instructors, like, were very careful to watch the handlers. Like, our instructor was like, oh, you know, your car's getting a little under the sun because the shade was moving. You know, are you going to move it? Like, we're very, very, very conscious of the dogs, made sure they had fans on them, aluminettes on the cars, like, everything. So that was really nice.
It was, definitely.
Just because, like, you know, we did the husbandry episode, there definitely is still a culture of get the dog out to work and throw him back in the box. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
Definitely not the best husbandry happening in the sport as a whole all the time. And, like, they were really careful about that here at the Hupper camp, which was really nice.
Yep, for sure. For sure. And definitely, like, Florian and Patricia made it, which, like, we'll get to that, but they made comments as well about, like, how important it is. So I'm definitely happy to see more awareness being brought to that. Like, hopefully it trickles down, because definitely it seems like some higher level people are starting to realize how much we do. And I'm sure people have for a while, but maybe it is just starting to trickle down that, like, we do need to treat these guys like athletes. So yeah, warm up, cool down, hydration, all that good stuff.
Yeah, so it was great. It was great to see that attention paid to everything. And just in general, like, literally the most well-run weekend possible. Like, yeah. I have a big camping background from growing up, and I came in expecting basically backcountry conditions, like, nothing really provided, nothing that I would be able to eat because I have dietary restrictions. Like, I came in expecting nothing, and it was basically a vacation because it was so well organized, yeah, and everything was so well provided for.
Yeah,
I really can't say enough about how well organized the event was, because it was a vacation, like I said. Like, it was incredible. So
it was and I think, like, something that popped into my head too is, like, it's interesting that this effort of unification is kind of getting pulled off, you know, like good success in year two with this helper work stuff. And it's, like, interesting to think about, like, huh, what if we did that for obedience or for tracking, you know? Again, it kind of goes back to what we initially started talking about, is, like, people are afraid to be the first to try something like this, because again, like, there's definitely some people at a high level in the dog world who disagree with Marco and the way he does things, and Marco and Sarah are just kind of like, well, like, this has worked in Finland, like, we're gonna go for it, you know what I mean? And they're doing it, and, like, kudos to them, you know, like, even if it wasn't successful, that's super, super courageous to just be like, I have a vision and I'm gonna try it, you know?
Yeah,
like, that's not something that everybody is willing to step up to the plate for. So I do hope it kind of spurs a little bit of that idea of, like, hey, we can be maybe a little bit more unified as a culture and a little bit more creative with some of this stuff. And, you know, I hope that vibe kind of carries through with people, even after Helper Camp, because it definitely did with me. Like, it was awesome to see that was possible, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I walked away from camp thinking, like, what can I do for this community? And the last day that we were reflecting and doing kind of takeaways and stuff like that, some of the guys in my group were saying, you know, this is all well and good, and this weekend was really impactful, but the fact is that I train with the same 10 people and have for 12 years, like, I don't get my hands on other dogs enough. Like, how can I help that? Like, there's no way, basically. And in general, like, being a handler for Helper Camp, I don't want to sound weird, but, like, I definitely feel that I was very giving in that sense, because I brought my dog, who is, she's not just a random dog, and, like, I have goals for this dog. So to bring her there and let her be worked by these people that are learning, like, that's a big sacrifice, that's a big risk, and everyone, all the handlers that brought their dogs to helper camp really took a huge risk because, especially if you don't know the system, like I had no idea about the system. I had no idea what was going to be shared, what was going to happen. So to like take that leap of faith is not a small thing. And in general, to be able to grow these helpers, there has to be more leaps of faith like across the country, which is scary, but I said to them, I was like, can you look on USCA website and see like what clubs are super far away from, you know, any really high level helpers? Like, could you call up their president and see if they'd be willing to let you work some young dogs or like see what's up? And they were like, no, you know, that would never fly. Nobody would ever let me do that. And I was like, okay, well, I'm president of my club and I want to have you two, the two guys I like really respected from the weekend. I was like, okay, I want to have you guys up. And we've got probably 20, 25 young dogs I can get together for a weekend and you can work them. Like, I'm going to put my money where my mouth is, basically. And, like, I want to see more people doing that. Like, it's a leap of faith and it sucks. And it's, you got to do it, though, because these guys are really trying to improve themselves. And Yuri had talked about they eventually want to do, like, a some sort of graduation so that you can say, like, oh, this person is helper camp certified or whatever. So maybe they come, you know, two or three summers and they can be signed off on as like this guy has a basic level of competency so that that'll be more accepted across the country. But
well, and something I want to say too that you kind of reminded me of is the risk thing. Like the other thing I want to point out is these helpers were vetted and some people got upset, not upset, but like a little bit confused about why it was a closed event. There were, as far as I know, I don't think there were any helpers there that had less than a couple years of experience and had shown that they have a basic commitment to the sport. And I think that's really important to keep in mind is that I don't think that you should be putting your dogs on helpers that don't even know how to give a grip, right? Like there's certain mechanics that you need to, like, I think it's important to know how to at least read and train a dog outside of helper work before you step behind a sleeve. Like I'm glad that I went that way in the process. and I definitely got the vibe that the organizers were being pretty careful about where their resources are going. And like, I just thought that was really interesting as an organizational thing is that they were looking for people that had obviously already showed commitment. And so again, like hopefully this doesn't need qualification because it's pretty obvious, but it's just, it did pop into my head that the like take calculated risks with your dog, right? Like people should be able to display a basic level of competency, which again is why like a helper camp certification would be really cool. But there are definitely helpers out there that think they understand certain systems and still don't and yada, yada. So yeah, like I just kind of wanted to comment on that too, is it was interesting to see that the bar for getting in to access to this resource was already like, and I think it was good that it was already like decently high. And I think that's a positive thing is like uphold the standards of the quality of helpers, just even through that kind of gateway, and the people that stick around and apply next year, like they'll probably get in, you know?
Yeah, it's really tough. It really is because at some point,
But I don't know.
Oh, sorry.
I just said it. I feel like it wasn't a super well-formed point, but hopefully.
Oh no, that was a great point. I was talking over you cause you cut out, but no, it's just tough because unfortunately somebody has to take a risk at some point. Somebody has to let you get your first bite, you know, like stuff like that.
Yeah.
So
yeah. But I think too, something else you said, and with the line work, which we can kind of talk about too, because I know your post about it got a lot of interest. That there should ideally only be one learner.
Yes.
Challenging about dog sports is usually there's at least two, right? There's the handler, there's the dog. Add in a helper, holy fuck, like that's no good to have three learners. So if you have someone who's just starting helper work, ideally have a competent handler and have an older dog who knows what they're doing, right? And we did have those available at helper camp, and it was awesome for certain things. Whereas younger dogs are great for others. And I think that's kind of the point I was trying to make, is like, if you have a young dog, understand where they're at and where you can contribute to developing helpers. My older retired dogs, like, for sure, when I could, like, yeah, bring them out, you know what I mean? And so if you have that dog, like, don't just sit on them. Like, they can definitely, again, like, with the safety of the dog in mind, if they're old and have injuries, obviously don't fucking work them. But you know, do you realize, like, where that value is? It's different dogs are useful for different things. So keeping in mind, like, who's learning in the situation. If it's the helper, then try for it not to be the dog. You know what I mean? That's the ideal.
Yeah, so this actually isn't anything anybody has ever said to me. I just came up with this, and I'm coining this. This is my phrase, which is minimize the number of learners. Like, I think that's in general a great idea when it comes to the sport. So, one thing that comes to mind, so there's a line work system that we'll talk about when you're doing these drive state switching, this work that was part of the camp. But it takes a little bit to figure out the line work. And I've backlined plenty of dogs over my time in the sport. Like, I have no problem keeping a dog safe on a backline with a harness. But this is a two-line work where one line is on the harness and then one line is live, either on a fur saver with the dead ring or the prong with the dead ring or whatever. And so I knew that I needed some time to figure that out. So when it was my turn to go at helper camp, I said to my instructor, I want to honor these guys and their time. This is their camp. It's their time to learn. So I do not want to do the lines for my own dog because I want to minimize the number of learners. And I don't want it to be all three of us learning. I want somebody experienced on the line so that we have at least that variable. And I'm going to go home to my club and I'm going to learn the line work in a situation that's more controlled. So I think in general, that's actually a really good takeaway. You want to honor who's supposed to be learning. And so when we came back to our club and we were doing a drop-in night, one of the handlers who's super motivated saw me take the lines, was like, no, I want to do the lines for my own dog. And I said, no, like, we're doing the system, blah blah blah, and like kind of explain it. And she's like, okay, well, I want to learn it. And I'm like, dude, I'm learning it right now, and me and Kim are figuring this out. Me, Kim, and Sam are like working on this, so like, no offense, but like, you got to take a seat. Like, you can learn it after we have figured it out and how it fits in our club and our work, and then we will start teaching the rest of you. But we're not going to stop this whole training evening to explain to you how to do the lines and then have you figuring it out while we have Kim trying to get feedback from me and Sam and the dog trying to learn. So
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
just becomes a mess really fast.
Yep, absolutely.
But basically, with the lines, the theory behind the lines is that you use the tools to acknowledge the drive state the dog is supposed to be in. So, just like you have, the helper has different markers, verbal cues, body language cues that indicate the dog is supposed to switch from prey to aggression or from aggression to prey. You have the lines as well. So, when there's tension on the harness, we're acknowledging the prey drive state. And when there's tension on the live, which is either the fur saver dead ring or the prong dead ring, we're acknowledging that the dog should be in that aggression. So that's basically the idea, is that to make the switching even more clear, the dog is also going to have different feedback from the tools. The feedback acknowledges the drive state. That's the idea. So oh my gosh, coughing. Too much talking.
I know. For some reason, my throat is very dry tonight.
Well, I know my mind's dry. I had 5 hours of check-ins, meetings with people.
So
What'd you say? Sorry, you
I
cut
had
out.
3 hours of teaching today straight, so that didn't help.
There you go. I love it.
Yep.
So let me see. Oh, the other interesting thing that I took away from Helper Camp, which was the notion of
Oh,
the active.
sorry. One more thing on the two lines I just remembered I was going to mention is also, so Helena's group used the lines that way a lot. My group did not necessarily, but where two lines were mentioned was safety. So this is really, really, really important that And I personally slack on this a lot, and I see a lot of people doing it because it's really easy. It's like not putting your seatbelt on in the car, like whatever. How often do you get in a car accident? Like you kind of forget about it, right? But when, especially when we're working aggression in front of a dog without equipment, if that line breaks, like your helper's pretty fucked, right? So, having always a second line on the dog, even just for backup and safety. And ideally, there's two different attachment points for that line, right? So, attachment points meaning either if you're on a static back line, you've got a second anchor, second post, whatever. Or if the dog is open fields, getting handled by handlers, you have a second handler holding the safety line, even if you're not using that for active training, what Lainey was describing. So I think that was a really important reminder, is again, like reminder for the husbandry of the dog, reminder for the safety of the helpers, like that stuff that we tend to kind of forget because it's not as like fun and, you know, exciting, but it's those basics are super, super important.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
I'm just getting through my notes, but yeah, the other interesting concept that we had at camp that I hadn't really thought about before is the active handler. So, if you think about when the dog is meant to be in an act of aggression, they're supposed to be thinking they're in a fight, right? And so the more old school idea of the helper's going to work your dog and you're going to stand back behind the line handler or whatever and not be involved is not what you should do, because it's like teaching your son how to beat up the bully on the playground, and then you walk up to the playground and shove your son and say, "Go, son, like go seek out your own fight, go do it." You know, you want to be there for him and back him up. So basically, protection sessions as consisting of the helper, an experienced line worker or two who are like key to the club, and then the handler being active. So handler being up with the dog where appropriate, praising the dog when they move the helper back with active aggression, like being in the fight together with the dog, basically.
Yeah. And I think it's funny because that's something that I think I've been like missing, but hadn't quite put my finger on like what's missing. But like when I work with a helper, like I kind of implicitly am active. So like actually it was kind of funny after coming back from oh my God, helper camp the weekend after we had Brady in. And I kind of like started watching myself and what I do, and the way he was working fidget, like he would back up and I would just let her walk in, and like he tells us to do that, and like I kind of just started doing it, right? And like some handlers I think don't pick up on that as quickly as like, hey, you're supposed to be, you know, as the dog is barking the guy away, you can let him chase a little bit or whatever, right? And like you're not necessarily just standing there like a post. And when I do helper work, I have a hard time giving people instructions because I'm so in it. I'm just like, I don't even like it feels like an interruption to tell the handler what to do. Like I'm just not skilled enough at it right now. And so I've seen Brady do that and I've been like, oh, that's cool, right? And I wish I was able to do that. But then like that next level is like your club should actually really, really understand and have that implicit knowledge of what they're doing with bite work. And I think that's what I've kind of been missing, is like that depth of it, and how important that actually is, because I see my sessions go a lot more fluidly with my dog because I know what I'm doing on the lines versus a more beginner person that just doesn't know. There's kind of some pieces where I'm like, ah, like the Brady could have been helped there if that person had moved a little bit more in the right way.
Well, there's a couple considerations here, which is that if you're doing your own line work, you can't be an active handler the way you should be. Like, there should ideally be the active handler, the experienced line work person, and the helper. The experienced line work person needs to have a relationship with the helper such that they can keep the helper safe. They need to be on the same page. Like, because that intelligent move forward can become very unsafe if you're just kind of doing that at the wrong moment. You don't know what the hell you're doing. Like, that's why in our club, I really want to develop me and Sam as line handlers and then encourage our the rest of our club members and drop in folks to be the active handlers. And I really don't want to see people backlighting their own dogs anymore. It's, it just doesn't make any sense. It's not appropriate to be doing it. So,
yeah.
I don't know. So I have like a bunch more takeaways, but I'm trying to find ones that won't get us like too deep into.
We definitely should do a couple episodes on this.
Yeah, I know. I'm not even like I've touched like 5% of my notes.
Right.
But just I'll talk a little bit about let's talk a little bit about our own dog takeaways.
Yeah.
So the biggest thing that I took away was Sister. Sister wasn't used that much at camp because the ideal dog for helper camp that can be worked a lot is actually a dog that struggles to fluidly switch between drive states or switch 100% when they do switch because they're trying to grow the helpers to get those dogs to switch. And they're trying to grow the helpers to get those dogs to switch all the way. So she was already doing a really nice job of switching between them, although not showing us as much as we wanted in active aggression. But because just because of the obedience barking that she'll slip into if you give her the chance. But basically, like, didn't use her as much for that reason. But I got a lot of good takeaways for, like, where to go with her training. Because a lot of the work we've been doing so far is showing a lot of the routine, which is really nice because she's got so much obedience on her. Like, you know, we could trial a one routine tomorrow or whatever, you know, like ridiculous. Just like she's seen a lot of the routine and it would be safe. But like the idea that we're trying to work on this year and trying to develop for her is showing even more in that active aggression because right now we've been like a little lazy because she's a really nice dog and Yuri said like this dog is giving you like 50 or 60% of what she's capable of right now just because we didn't acknowledge those drive states fully and like given the chance she's going to move into the obedience barking and just more of like it's not active or passive aggression. I'd say it's like status quo aggression. She's just kind of like continuing. And it's like there should just be more emotion there and more power than like what's being shown at this time. So that was like my biggest takeaway, I would say, like about her training. And then additionally, I got like a lot of notes about the transition phase and like the different ways that people work that and the different ways people trial prep. And I'm just... my understanding of trial prep is very different now in terms of what I was talking to you about at drop-in night, which is that the dogs do not need to see the trial picture.
No. Yeah.
Like this drive switching work, like it doesn't go away. Like this is the work. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely like trial prepping for obedience, but like it's always about the fundamentals. Like fundamentals never go away. Like you keep rewarding the dog for stuff. You keep, you know, having to make corrections or whatever, you know, however you train, like whatever your system is, you never go outside the system. Like it's always, yeah, like it's not just like, oh, sweet, my dog knows it. We're going to just drill it for the rest of the dog's life. Like it, everything's always in maintenance.
Right.
There's no such thing as done.
Do you want to share your dice takeaways?
Oh, yeah. So I think we kind of mentioned this on the last podcast that like, I think it was a cool refresher to see that, how much difference training can make. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I think we've actually said it before on this podcast and like you've said it to handlers that, you know, you actually have very little influence over who your dog is. And it's like, it's very true. Like base level personality, you don't have a whole lot of influence, right? Like your kid is what it is. Like I'm the person I am, but I can absolutely make adjustments to my habits. I can make adjustments to the part of my brain that I access more quickly. Like I have what I have, but you can change patterns of behavior and emotion drives behavior. So like if you change that, right? Like all that stuff, like you can actually dig into the psyche more than you might think. And so yeah, that like was way too deep than it needed to be. Anyway, point being, I kind of forget to train my dog a little bit in bite work. And it's always been a little bit of a struggle for me because I'm like, well, I shouldn't work my own dog. And Greg basically gave me permission to say, like, yeah, that's really not true. And he used a lot of fighting analogies for me that made really perfect sense. And it totally jives in my head now, which I definitely want to talk more again. Like, it'll have to be another episode. But, like, the way that Greg presented his information was, like, exactly what I needed. And especially at this point in my life, which is kind of hilarious. Like, I had so many mind melds over helper camp. It was just insanity. But anyway, so, and especially with Ivan showing up, I was like, what? Anyway, so with Dice, I realized that essentially I should just be doing more pray sessions with him because he needs to be reminded to stay and pray. Like, he wants to go into aggression. He slips into his nerve a little bit, and starts getting a little bit munchy on the grips. And as Greg would say it, like, he's too much focused on rival aggression. And so just basically teaching him, hey, like, s access your prey a little bit more than what you've been doing. Like, I saw it have massive carryover after literally probably, I don't know, like, Sam would know, but probably like 3, 4 sessions with this dog when we got home. And the like he's been and I mentioned it again last episode, I think. But he's had some issues with being vocal on the grips, all this stuff, right? And he was dead silent. Like, as soon as we started working with Brady that Friday for trial prep, I was like, whoa, like, this is a different dog. Like, holy shit, training actually works, you know? So that was really cool to see. I think that was probably my biggest takeaway with him personally. And again, probably honestly, like, same idea of, like, I haven't really accessed the dog's full potential. Like, I think I would like to experiment with just, like, working him myself a little bit more and kind of see what I can get out of him. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think a parallel situation is another dog that we train with. Like, we were trying to develop the barking, kind of get under his skin more, cause a lot of frustration with the barking. And then even at home, you know, the handler being like, oh, he's been loud when I play tug with him and blah, blah, blah. And then he starts being vocal on the sleeve and like all that stuff. Like, it just seems so clear to me now.
Right.
It was too much rival aggression. Like, we didn't need that. We needed, to
We
work the
failed.
dog in prey, because a dog in prey isn't going to be loud on the grip because it's prey. Like, you don't snarl at the rabbit when you have it caught in your mouth. That doesn't make any
Right.
sense.
Right. Like, we failed to fully transition him back to prey because we took for granted, and this dog is insanely high prey, but he's also very, very high in rival aggression, or again, like, as you know, in Marco's language or other language, active aggression, right? And so he gets stuck, like, not transitioning back into prey. And so once we started helping him make those transitions more clearly, like, dead quiet on the grips, right? And, like, again, it's like once you start thinking about it, it's so obvious. And again, like, that's also coming from a place of, like, this might be a little bit confusing to people that haven't really been exposed to this before. Like, we've been exposed to this before, so it was just kind of fitting puzzle pieces in place. But yeah, like, it was really cool to see how quickly it's like, oh yeah, we were just being a little bit lazy and taking for granted that this dog would just kind of do it on its own. Which, again, back to that idea of, yes, you need the genetics, but you gotta have quality training. Like, you cannot take these dogs for granted. Like, they still need the right situations. They still need help to show to their fullest potential.
Well, that's the hard thing for me, is that I wasn't being lazy. I just literally didn't know
Right.
any of this theory. Like, I remember, I feel like I said a couple episodes ago, I don't know how to develop dogs in protection. I have no idea what you even do or what you're trying to do. And now if you ask me, how do you develop a dog in protection, I would say,
That's a good answer.
I absolutely have my answer already. So I guess that's the hard thing, is that we've just got these dogs that everyone keeps telling us are nice, and so we just kind of keep on keeping on and keep showing
Right.
them more and more of the routine. And in the meantime, the dogs are super confused. The dogs are not being, properly switched from drive state back and
Well, so I
forth.
think that's
Like,
what's interesting, though, right? Is, like, the dogs don't, like, you don't really see it a whole heck of a lot. Like,
oh
I think what you're
no.
describing is, like, people, you could get this picture of, like, oh my gosh, it must look like a shit show. How could you let that go on?
Oh no. Yeah.
They would be like pretty damn good, like SG, maybe sometimes on a good day V routines. Like that's what's kind of interesting about all this stuff and why people do argue you don't necessarily need it. And that very well may be true, like on a certain level. Like I think that's what's very, very interesting about all this as well.
Well, and I would even, I mean, again, I would even say they could be in protection. Like
Yes.
that's what I'm saying. Like there's a lot of dogs across the country that are covering for
Yes.
maybe not the work. I don't want to say bad work, but they're covering for work that might not be exactly what they needed, because the fact is that this is what these dogs are bred for, and the protection phase is
Yes.
all about showing their natural capabilities. So
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't know how much of a difference it'll translate to in score. Like, I don't know, super drastic or not, but certainly really drastic for the dogs that are more borderline, for sure.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, the other note I wanted to make is that there's this sense where if you're trying to get active aggression, people just make a ton of reactive aggression, and it's
Yes.
just a helper friggin' doing a
Flailing
scary.
and
What'd you say? What'd you say?
flailing and whipping and all
Yeah,
this stuff.
doing a scary dance and, hurting dogs, really. And so something I really like that our instructor shared was that people who are dumb or people who their ego is involved, they think you need to go harder into the dog, but you don't. You just need to go deeper into the dog and its drive state. So you need to have a better understanding of the dog and its mindset. You need to focus more on the whole picture of the dog. So some of these people that are like, go hard into the dog, they love those scary teeth snarls and when the dog's face is all bleh. But what they fail to see is, for example, something like the way the dog's feet are and the way the dog is standing.
Where the momentum is in the dog's
Yeah. A dog that's truly in active aggression is going to stand full and firm and forward. You can get those scary teeth on a dog that's literally backing up, like, and it's not appropriate at all and not correct. So,
Yeah, that's funny. Greg said, fuck, now of course I'm gonna forget it because my notes weren't right in front of me, but there's 5 points on a dog, and basically he went through exactly that idea of like look at the whole picture of the dog and what they're telling you. Like the mouth is only one of those points. Like
yeah.
look at the tail, look at the ears, look at like where the feet are, all that good stuff.
Yeah. The other big takeaway I took for Sister, which is that Yuri does a lot of really cool stuff with obedience as a frustrator. So what he talks about is obedience and protection is not a suppressor. It's completely wrong to think of it like that. It's a frustrator. You can use it as a frustrator when you stop thinking of it as a suppressor. And his whole idea is like something's going to leak out somewhere.
Yes.
So control where so you don't see it randomly somewhere. And so thinking about my dog, the whole thing with my dog is it's coming out somewhere. Where's it going to come out?
Yeah.
He gave us a lot of really cool ideas to implement with her. And like, I've even seen it in the obedience too. So like, you can give her these moments to basically blow the valve off the friggin' thing and just go nuts. And then you can bring her down again and then up again and down again. Like you can, if you give them that opportunity to burn it off, basically.
Yeah.
Especially in secondary. So I thought that was really cool. And like, me, I hate suppressing the dogs. So I was happy to hear, like, you don't have to think of it as a suppressor because
Totally.
my whole thing is giving them, appropriate outlets. So.
Yeah, like that's what people truly mean when they say cap and drive, like done correctly. It's again that kind of idea of the boiling pot. So as an example of that, like I'm not sure if this is exactly kind of what he was talking about, but like what would come to mind would be you're healing, and then you let the dog go into aggression from the healing and then back into healing, that sort of thing, right?
Yeah,
Like
that's like
that.
the basic exam. That's like the main example.
Yeah, so again, like the dog gets almost rewarded, you could say. Like whether you think of it as a blow off valve or however, right? But the dog gets rewarded for being in obedience and then has to make a quick transition. Because the thing we didn't talk about is like at first Lainey describes the transitions between prey and aggression. The other transition that I forgot that Marco talks about in his little intro presentation was the transition to obedience, right? Because there's actually three components of the bite work. There's prey, aggression, and obedience. And so using obedience strategically, like, that wasn't touched on a whole heck of a lot, because again, it was mostly focused on prey and aggression, obviously, because that's what the helpers can control. Obedience is the handler's job. But when you use that tool properly, it again comes into a complete system that helps the dog be in the right frame of mind at the right point of the routine.
Yeah. The last funny thing that I have, last like takeaway, is that Todd was worked for the first time in protection by someone who had never worked a puppy, which is really funny because the guy, he's just one of the best guys at camp. Like, I really liked him. I'm not going to expose who it was, but like, he's really talented and really talented trainer.
Yeah.
But he like panicked. He was like, I'm just gonna end it. I'm just gonna end the session and we can talk about it. Like, I don't know how to do this with these puppies, like super small puppies.
Yeah.
It was really funny. I really liked it. But yeah, it was really fun because I came out of that session and was like, oh man, this is a really nice puppy. So yeah. that was a good little ego boost for me. And like, it was nice to see Todd, like, you know,
none.
I've kind of just been like, he is what it is, and not really cared that much about it because he's my second dog. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't matter if he works out or not, really. Like, can sell him, no problem. Give him to my brother, whatever, if he sucks.
I'm afraid about that.
What'd you say?
I love how you're just like, to my face, like, it doesn't really matter. I don't really care about him.
Well, you know what I mean. I care I about know. Him, but it's not like.
I know. It's just funny.
It's like, I already have a dog that I'm really happy with, so if he works out, that's wonderful, but if not, like, yeah. It's totally fine.
Yeah.
But it was funny because I walked away, and, you know, you run a puppy off the field, puppy's got a little rag in his mouth, blah, 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 and, you know, the puppy's gonna do puppy stuff, and, like, they're probably gonna drop it, it's fine. I ran Todd back to the car, and I sat down on the ground with him, because you're supposed to walk the dogs, like, 10 minutes, so I was gonna have him out a long time.
Yeah.
And he didn't spit it out. It was like 14 minutes or something stupid like that. Like, he just held it and stared at me like, hey, you're not taking this. I'm just going to let you know that right now. Like, I've never seen a puppy so young. He was like 14 weeks. I've never seen a puppy like hold something for that long. Like,
yeah.
He was so, I don't know. You've seen the possession already, I'm sure, in other contexts. But like, it was just so funny to me because I hadn't done anything with him to that point at all. I barely knew him.
Yeah.
And then, like, I work him, and he just looks, like, super nice. I was like, oh, that's so funny. But.
Oh, man.
Because, like, I had an idea of the striking or whatever from playing two ball, and, like, I'd seen speed. But, like, I had never let him possess anything. Like,
right.
I don't know.
Right.
It was just hilarious to me.
Right.
And
right.
I was just coming away from, like, being at my parents. My parents was like, this dog is the dumbest puppy of all time. So. It was cute.
What else?
Yeah, I want to wrap it up here and we can pick back up. We're just gonna have to we probably won't do another like dedicated recap episode. We'll probably just like keep filtering in lessons over the next few weeks, I feel like.
I didn't actually like put my notes in front of me, but I think like, I definitely enjoy, like, my last kind of like big takeaway thing is like, what I really enjoyed for me personally is the way that Greg connected everything to nature. And to me, I like things that make sense on more of a meta level. Like, I don't really do well with someone just saying like, this is just how it is, right? Like, I really enjoy understanding the whole context, like behavior that you see, like the whole, like, Lainey makes fun of me for it, but like, dog training is life, right? Like, you can see principles of behavior, whether it's human, dog, squirrel, like, it really doesn't matter. Like, operant conditioning is consistent in, like, you know, I'll say all animals, but I'm sure someone's gonna present to me a fucking sea urchin that doesn't, but like, they still have habituation, so fuck you. So anyway, so like, learning principles are still present in all creatures, and so when someone talks about that, that makes sense to me. But like, some stuff that people say, it's like, I don't really think that fits with my view on life and in the world. And so the way that Greg connected everything back to the way that animals react, like predators specifically, the way that predators act in nature, it's like, yep, that totally makes sense. Like, totally makes sense to me. Like, talking about fighting analogies, like, I really, like, not that I've really, really like fought, but like, now I understand the idea of sparring versus like, okay, this is a fight for your life, and like we want to teach the dogs to spar, and like, you know, I can work my own dog because it's a sparring session with your coach. Like, it's not a fucking street fight. So I don't know, like, I just really appreciated the style that he taught in. And again, like, I'm sure that's really like similar for other instructors, but just the specific language he used for me, it happened to fit really, really well for my kind of particular learning style. And I think, again, like, I definitely like underappreciated him at the other seminar because I kind of was like, wait, like, I don't really get all, like, it was a little too out of context. And I was like, this kind of sounds a little bit like disconnected. And but then once he put it all together, I was like, oh, like, this makes complete sense. So yeah, I specifically liked the language he used, and definitely would highly, highly recommend like digging into his stuff, if you have the opportunity. So,
Yeah, I mean, big takeaway, all those
well,
instructors are
yeah,
super
of course.
worth your time, like to go see if you can.
Yeah, absolutely.
So.
Yeah, so sweet.
Cool. Well, that's our episode for this week. Sorry again for the rant at the beginning. I mean, sorry, not sorry. Like, I'm not sorry at all, or I would edit it out. But, you know, just keep that in mind. Be gracious. Give people grace. Like, just here's the this is the big thing that I've been on a kick about lately, is that you need to, when you find yourself attributing a negative motivation to somebody, when you find yourself saying, oh, they did that because they're, you know, annoying, or oh, they did that because they're trying to be cooler than they are, or whatever you're trying to attribute to somebody, as a thought exercise, just take the time to try to attribute a positive motivation to that person. Oh, they said that annoying thing because, you know, they've had a hard time over the last couple of years finding a good group to be a part of, and they're just trying to fit into this one, or whatever the case may be. Like, just take the time to try to attribute the best case scenario to people. And I think that you'll find in general you have a lot more patience and you can give people a lot more grace.
Yeah, and in general, those explanations are like no one walks around, like, what's that silly meme that was like going around for a while, is like, no one's the villain in their own story. Like,
Right.
even truly, like, even psychopaths think that they're doing the right thing. Like people don't do things for no reason, and they don't do things for like purely, I don't know. It's just so rare that somebody actually does something out of spite. Like, nobody's thinking that fucking hard about you and spite you.
No,
Like,
they're
it's,
really not. They're really not.
you know, which is like, I don't know. I think, yeah, it's just like, it's really not that deep sometimes. Like, literally, it's just a pattern of behavior that this person has learned. You know, they're not thinking that hard about it.
Yeah, and the camp as a whole demonstrated it, because
Yep.
with the exception of like one kind of hothead incident, everybody else was super professional, super, super cool, super respectful. Even people that you know for a fact do not get along were just, you know, respectful and professional, which is all you can ask for, really. So,
Yep.
much appreciated. And I think that we can all take something away from that, because one of the biggest, like, if you really can't stand somebody and somebody's like a big problem for you, at least for me, one of the most gratifying things is just to be relentlessly professional to that person. Like, relentlessly do not let them get under your skin. Relentlessly don't weirdly avoid them or let them keep you from doing what you want to do. Just show up and be professional, and, you know, just, you know, keep them at arm's length professionally, but kindly, with respect. Like, there's no need to be weird about
No,
stuff.
like, again, like, not like This is a little not opposite of what you're saying, but like along those lines. But I'm not, again, like not trying to insert, I'm not trying to tell people to get emotional about it. And like the quote is, fuck, the opposite of love is not hate, it's indifference. Like that's kind of what you're saying, right? And like I don't mean to sound like, ah, like you should hate people. Like that's not what I'm trying to say. But like if you really just don't want to interact with a person, like you don't have to, just like I don't know, it's like block, like literally, like this funny thing about blocking is it's just being indifferent to that person. Like you're not part of my life anymore. Like there's no need to get vengeance or revenge or be vindictive. It's just like, yeah, like you're just a person who exists, and I just realized that our relationship ends at a professional relationship, and that is totally okay.
Oh my gosh, wait, I have to tell a quick story because this is so relevant. Right before Helper Camp. So I know somebody who is super involved with dogs and does it professionally. And we had a casual friendship over the last few years, talking, every now and then. I helped out by being kind of a listening ear in like some tough situations, like whatever, like a more, not a deep friendship, but like certainly a mutual respect and like both in the same community. But I noticed that like she just lacked patience in some ways with people, and like when someone would say something dumb, there's gonna be a Facebook status of like people who say X are so stupid, like blah blah blah, like just kind of Facebook statuses about stuff like that, and just like that subtweeting kind of thing, which I have plenty of close friends that do that subtweeting stuff, and like I get it, I've been guilty of it in the past, but I'm committed to never doing it again. I will tell everybody 100% exactly who I'm talking about if I talk about anybody online, because I just find it so cowardly. Anyway, so this girl would always kind of post this stuff, and basically we got in an argument, and I said, we got in an argument because I figured out that one of those posts was about something I had said. And I said, you know what? I thank you for the good conversations that we've had, but for my own peace, I am going to remove you as a friend. I'm going to unfollow you. I'm going to do all that stuff. And no hard feelings. Like, I wish you the best. I wish you the best couple of decades here. I wish you the great rest of your life. Like, I have no ill wishes to you whatsoever, but I can't have people like that around me
No.
that I'm worrying about what I say, that there's going to be some kind of thinly veiled post about it. I'm just not. Because this is 2022, the world is going to end in water crisis in 5 or 6 years. You're not going to spoil my peace before that happens. Like, you're just not.
Right.
So, I definitely re recommend that people do that, because certainly her feelings were hurt and she did not understand why I felt the need to do that. But that's irrelevant because I haven't thought about it since then. And to be honest, thinking back, I feel like a weight's off my shoulders. I feel like
Yeah.
if you see somebody kind of posting that shit all the time, you're always kind of wondering when it's going to be about you.
Yeah.
And it's just not really something you really need in your life. It's just not.
No, and again, like I think you have to choose what type of character you're okay with and what you want to be around, right? And
Right.
like I think again, like I agree, like if you're not, yeah, like if you're gonna post on social media and not confront that person about it, like that's to me like not good. And again, like I've been guilty of not confronting people when I need to, for sure. But I think it definitely shows, like, if that's a consistent pattern, that that person doesn't even like feel shame about, like that would be definitely for me personally a red flag in that relationship. And like I think the fact that she was confused shows you like, okay, yeah, like that was the right choice, because we just don't have the same outlook on life, and that's okay. But like that's not something that you want to be around, and that's fine.
Yeah, it's totally fine. And just like people, these days are all positive about rehoming dogs, like feel positive about ending friendships or drawing a boundary where it needs to be drawn. And the people that come back to you and say, oh my gosh, I totally understand, let's, have that boundary, or I totally understand, go in peace, like that's too bad, but like I'll see you later. Like those are the people that then you're like, oh shit, wow, that's, that's really respectful. Maybe this person didn't need to be cut out, but guess what? They never do that because they're always angry.
Exactly.
Which is why they were good candidates for the excising, but
Yeah, right.
anyway, I have to go for my own peace, so
Boundary on your time. Yeah. Yeah, no announcements, right? Oh, Amanda's seminar. We are hosting Amanda Homan July 8th to 10th. We have working spots and audit spots available, Sauk City, Wisconsin. Reach out about lodging because we have some low cost slash free options if
yeah, I
you're
was about to say, what's the cost?
open.
I said it was free.
I was gonna be like, I don't know, something stupid like you owe me, I don't know, a box of Cheez-Its or something, but
No.
yeah, so
Yeah, I'm doing youth outreach, which is that all the young shits and people that, I mean, I get it, like we're all poor, like we need to save money to spend it at the seminar, so
right.
people are welcome to come stay at my house if they want.
Yep.
I'm setting up like a, what are they? It's like a hur it's like if there's a hurricane or something, and they set up like a Red Cross shelter. That's what my basement's gonna look like.
And if I know you at least casually, you're welcome to camp at our property. So that's pretty much probably anyone who's going to bother to show up to the seminar. I probably have a connection with you. So yeah, we have options.
Yeah. Everybody come on out. Should be a good time.
Sweet.
Okay. All right, Kim. I'll talk to you later.
Sounds good. Bye, guys.